Hello and welcome to the Hayloft Hour. I am your host Jordan, otherwise known on the internet as Spotted Bay Productions. I have been viewing the world through the ears of a horse since I was 2 years old, and this podcast is my attempt at uncovering the dark side of the equine industry. True crime, scandals, and horror stories that might otherwise stay locked away in the hayloft. My purpose is to make these stories well known so that we can make sure they never happen again, and to let others who may find themselves in these situations know that they are not alone. Make sure to join us on social media to follow my daily life with my two horses. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Spotted Bay Productions. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe wherever you listen and share it with your friends. If you have an episode suggestion or a personal story you'd like to submit, email it to me at spottedbay@gmail.com, but please leave out the personal info and just leave behind the juicy details. In today's episode, we will be covering horror stories submitted by my Instagram followers that have been sent into my email. I haven't read any of these yet, so we will get to experience them together. There may be uncomfortable topics in these stories, so please proceed with caution and feel free to skip ahead or exit the episode if a topic arises about which you are not comfortable listening, and we will catch you in the next episode. Let's jump into some stories. All right, this first one, the subject line is Barn Girl Tried to Ruin Her BFF's Life. This whole situation I'm about to describe is 100% true and one of the craziest things I've ever heard. At my barn, there was a group of girls ranging in age from 14 to 24 that were all essentially sisters. They went to shows together, they slept at each other's houses, the whole deal. They were very close and one of the defining groups of our barn. I will be referring to people in the story by random letters to protect their anonymity. About a month ago, one of the girls, R, who was a minor, had the other girl, D's boyfriend, take her to a local convenience store that has hot food. The boyfriend was over 18. The boyfriend thought nothing of this because R is basically D's little sister. Apparently, R came on to D's boyfriend. The boyfriend was having none of this and freaked out on R and drove her back home and left. R went around saying the boyfriend got her pregnant and all of this crazy stuff, but she was upset he rejected her. D freaked out, rightfully so. Long story short, after this happened and rumors spread, R never spoke to D or any of the other girls she'd been close with for years again. It even got her kicked out of our barn and she had to move her horse out 2 weeks later. D is no longer with the boyfriend and no one has heard anything from her since. Well, that was not what I expected for the first story out of the box to be kind of a tale outside of the barn, but it is kind of one of those things that you see in the horse world where you get so close to the people that you're around all the time, whether it's in your saddle club or your barn group or your lesson group or whatever it is, and you get so close and then something really negative happens and it affects the way that things are at your barn, or people retaliate and that affects your horse or your showing or whatever else. So super crazy. All right, let's jump into story number two. This one is titled Horses Starved to Skin and Bone. About 10 years ago, I was going to a different state, 1,500 miles away, with my dad for 2 months while he looked for work because my mom didn't want him traveling alone. He's half blind. We contacted a friend of a friend that had a few acres and a small barn to see if she would board our horses for those 2 months. She happily obliged and we worked out a deal. Her horses were fat and happy, so I thought mine would be too. I provided the first 2 weeks of food and gave her the agreed-upon amount for board for the 2 months. Only a few weeks in, she called me saying my horses were eating her out of house and home and she needed more money. I happily sent her whatever she asked. The day after my dad and I got back, we went to see our horses. They were starved to skin and bone. The lady came marching out of her house saying she thinks something is wrong with them, and she had the vet come out, but he said nothing is wrong, but she thinks there must be. When we asked what she thinks it is, she started yelling at my dad and I, saying it was all my fault. When I checked the feed bins we left, they were completely full. While she was talking to my dad, I tried to answer a text from my mom, but the lady stuck her finger in my face and yelled about how disrespectful I was. I legit had to hold my hands behind my back and pray not to punch her. Thankfully, my dad steered her away, and I called my mom to tell her not to come by because she would be too upset by their condition. The next day, we went to the office of the vet that the lady had had look at my horses and asked what he thought. His exact words were, "There's nothing wrong with those horses, I just told her to feed them." My mare had horrible rein rot, and I found out that the lady's granddaughter was riding my mare and claiming her as her own, even though I left strict instructions no one was to ride them. We managed to find an emergency solution for them and got them rehabbed safely. Then I had to go through the tedious journey of retraining them a bit from all the bad riding they had been subjected to. I have a lot of stories. I don't trust anyone with my horses anymore. Every single barn owner I've boarded with had done me or them both dirty, and I'm extremely discouraged by that. If my current self-care situation ever changes, I'm terrified of having to go through all that drama again. That was heavy. But I completely empathize with this because I had something similar happen to me, not quite to this degree. But the thing that confuses me the most is that she said the feed bins were full. It's not like the horses were out of hay or out of grain and the woman would have had to go buy more feed for them. The feed was there. And if you're paying for board, I mean, depending on what your boarding agreement is, but I'm guessing that these people had worked out like a full care situation. That woman was supposed to be giving them the feed. I mean, how hard is it? The boarder is giving you the feed. All you've got to do is scoop it and feed it every day to two horses. If you don't want to do that, then don't board horses. That's crazy. I had been boarding at a barn and I was portioning out the feed so that all they had to do is like dump it in for the horses every day, and they wouldn't even do that. And I knew that they weren't feeding my horses because I portioned out enough for the week, and then when I would come back a week later to redo them all, there would still be a lot left. And I'm just like, why are you not feeding my horses? That is the basic level of care at a full care facility. And that's also why now when I get a boarding contract, I make sure that everything is stated in there, even things that are so dumb that you would think, oh, you don't have to put that in a contract, that's common sense. I'm like, nope, I want it in there. Because if you put it in writing, at least you have something to go back to. And they can never say, oh, I didn't know you wanted your horse fed. So moral of the story, trust no one when it comes to boarding your horses or taking care of your horses, because nobody's going to care for your horses like you are. I'm really grateful right now that I'm in a place where I feel they take really good care of my horses, and I haven't had to worry once about basic care that you think would be common sense for any boarding situation. But even if it was self-care board, the barn manager or whatever should say something to you long before your horses are skin and bone if you're not there seeing them every day. Like, I don't know if people think boarding is easy money, because it certainly isn't, like caring for a bunch of people's horses. But I do know people who have that mindset of, oh, I'll just board a couple horses and it'll just be money in my pocket or paying my bills. And it's like, well, but you're also taking on more work. That's why boarding is expensive, because yes, you're providing them with a place to stay or food or hay or whatever your agreement is, but you're also providing labor to take care of those horses every single day or paying employees to do it. Anyway, all right, so this next one is just says Horse World Story is the title. I'm going to start reading the email verbatim. So I first want to say I completely understand that this is unacceptable now, but as a 16-year-old learning to ride in my first ever lesson barn, I was very ignorant. Let's call this barn the Smith Lesson Barn. It was run by the three Smith sisters who would always get into fights over who owned and had the rights to each horse. They had around 20 stalls and a feed stall connected to the indoor arena. They had a few horses in a field, mainly retired, and one unbroke horse out there as well. When I arrived to start lessons, one stall was empty. At my last lesson, all stalls, including the feed stall, were full, and there were at least 5 lesson horses in the pasture with the other 3 to 5 retired horses and the unbroke horse. This pasture was not large. It was as big as probably 30 yards by 50 yards at the most. A lot of these horses didn't really go outside much because there wasn't room. It made sense that some of the horses would be known to misbehave to get their energy out. I left that barn a couple weeks after I saw how crowded the horses were and how many lessons they did a day. I saw on the board 2 jumping lessons for 1 15-year-old gelding just a few hours apart. They also jumped the horses 4 times a week or more. Now I believe one of the sisters left for New York to take her horse away from this mess of a barn. One of the other sisters took 8 horses in the middle of the night and left. The last sister, I believe, hired a new trainer and bought more horses. I'm glad I left because I was also advancing too quickly. The new trainer, I hope, was better than the old one. He had me jumping 2'3" after 4 months of riding, and I didn't even know how to get a change from a couple horses. I also fell into an oxer because I didn't know proper position, and I'm still scared of them. I'm very glad my equitation has improved and I have moved on from there. There's a lot to unpack in that relatively short story. So first, as far as how many people were running that barn. I have also seen that situation where you have like a couple different trainers that go in on a barn together and they can't agree on anything, and it's just like this constant fight and battle. Annoying. As far as the hoarding way too many horses for the property, I feel like that's a lot of horse properties that I see, and no horse deserves to be stuck in a stall 24/7 just because there's no room for them. And the lesson horse comment, I completely understand why a lot of barns are going away from having lesson horses, because it's just not sustainable for a lot of horses to go in two or three lessons a day, 5 or 6 days a week, especially jumping. They're just not going to hold up very well. And to be able to handle that level of riding and be a beginner level safe horse, those things usually aren't going to come in the same package. As far as the advancing too quickly, I have seen that in a lot of lesson barns. Back when I used to teach, I used to have some clients that would get kind of irritated that I wouldn't let them jump or they weren't jumping enough. But I would tell them, I would say, you can go to a jumping barn and they'll put you over courses and keep raising the jumps every week, but you're going to have a lot of holes in your training, and eventually something's going to happen. You're going to get hurt, or you're going to, you know, get into an accident, and then you're going to have to start all over again because either you got an injury and you had to be off for a long time, or now you have fear. And I never wanted my riders to fall because it sets you back so far, especially if it creates fear, which is very common in all ages of people. I would say especially older people, because kids tend to kind of forget and move on a little bit faster, especially after a week between their lessons. But if you have an adult who falls or has a serious injury, they're going to be much more hesitant about getting back on or jumping again or whatever it is, and that's really, really hard to work through. So, but it sounds like all of these trainers kind of dissolved and maybe fixed some of their issues, so that's good. And I'm glad this person got out of their situation. But like the beginning of this email said from this person who sent it, that when you're 16 and learning to ride, you don't really know what's right and what's wrong. And that's why I want to share these stories, is because, you know, when you're looking at this in retrospect, you're like, oh my gosh, I should have ran for the hills from that place. But when you're in it, it's kind of that analogy of if you throw a frog into boiling water, they'll jump out because they're like, oh my God, it's hot in here. But if you put the frog in water and slowly turn up the heat, they kind of, you know, by the time they realize it's to a boiling point, it's too late. They're stuck and they can't jump out. And I see that happen in the horse world a lot, especially because we get so involved. Like, you make your friends there, maybe your horse lives there, you are showing with them, whatever. And it can be really, really hard to leave that. So looking for red flags up front before you get in too deep can be a lifesaver. All right, next story. I'm going to read this email verbatim as well. Thank you so much for doing this. Some people don't see how toxic the equestrian world can be, and by you doing this, it gets the word out there that things aren't what they seem and that no one is alone during their dark times. I've been riding English for about 8 years. In those 8 years, I've seen a lot. Some experiences have affected me, and some I've been able to let go of. So here's some of the experiences that have affected my riding life and my thought process. Also, I hope it's okay I have multiple stories. If you would like to leave some out, that's perfectly fine with me. Also, these will sound like they're made up, but they're not, which makes this so crazy that other kids went through this too while at this barn. We went through a lot of trainers, and when I say a lot, I mean a lot. In this week, we had gone through, I think, 3 trainers. One in particular really caused some damage. It was my first time riding anything other than a pony, so naturally I was very nervous. I remember telling the trainer I needed help, as I was a very nervous rider and often cried during lessons. She proceeded to scream at me while I was doing the course. As I was jumping over the jump, the horse took over and started to pick up speed as we were heading to a random jump. The trainer was still screaming at me and got even more frustrated after I jumped the jump I wasn't supposed to. And as I proceeded to have more lessons with this trainer, the more and more scared I became to ask questions, ask for help, or speak up. After I grew up a bit and wanted to do higher jumps after doing cross rails for 4 years, I brought up the courage to ask, "Do you think we can jump a vertical today? I saw the older girl's lesson and I want to try." The owner was not too happy that I asked that and snapped back with, "I suggest you fix that attitude of yours, because if you ask that question again, you'll be kicked off the property and not welcome back, so watch yourself." I remember getting off the horse and walking out of the arena. At this barn, we had leases, both half and full leases. I was full leasing a horse that I had been working with for 3 to 4 years. She was coming back from an injury, and I had asked that no one ride her except for me, and that she also not be able to be used in summer camps as she has anhidrosis and summers were really brutal for her. Sidebar, if you don't know anhidrosis, it's when horses have trouble sweating. Either they don't sweat or they don't sweat enough, and they can overheat. All right, back to the story. I was gone in Florida for a vacation, and I had my friend keep an eye on her for me to make sure she didn't get used during summer camps. While I was in Florida, I checked Facebook to see that she was being used in summer camps in 110 degree weather. I was pissed. I called the barn owner to explain my frustration, as it's in the lease agreement that I will be able to make decisions on if the horse can be used during summer camps and lessons, to which she told me she never approved of it and I was lying and ruining her business. Right before we bought the horse I was leasing, my dad got a call from a student at the barn that a lady who decided that since her own lease horse was injured, she could just pick up whatever horse she wanted, and that horse was my horse. She did not groom her, she just tacked her up immediately, didn't warm her up at all, and didn't cool her down either. This would explain why my horse's back flared up and she was extremely exhausted. The woman who had called to let us know that my horse was being used told the woman to put my horse back and that she needed to come with her. They went to the barn owner's apartment and made the lady who wrongfully rode my horse explain everything, and no action was taken. Yikes. So that all kind of tumbled into each other. And sadly, I can say that that I feel like is the story for a lot of people, is that it's just this constant stream of like one issue on top of the next. And if you try to say anything, either nothing will happen or you're going to be the one that gets in trouble because you're the one that's causing problems. It's literally just like adult versions of school bullies. Like, if you're being bullied in school, they say, well, you should tell an adult, you should stand up for yourself, you should do something, and then you do that, and you are the one that gets in trouble, or you get kicked out, or you get ostracized, and it's just like a lose-lose situation. There's another kind of sub-story after this, so from the same sender. So, as this person said, they've been riding English for about 8 years, and at the barn they used to ride at, the horses got very minimal vet attention. If a horse was injured, the owner would either take care of the issue or leave it alone, resulting in no one else taking care of it or a student taking care of it. I remember a horse had recently gotten injured, and we had no stalls. All horses were on 24/7 turnout no matter what. The horse was put out to pasture with duct tape around its bandages. While I was walking past the pasture, the horse had its leg tangled up in the fencing because the fencing was very poor and easy for horses to get tangled up in or escape. I went to go help the horse and I tripped and fell over a tree root. Me tripping caused the horse to spook, and since the leg was caught in the fence, the horse pulled back and did some critical damage. I was 9. I didn't have a phone and I couldn't call anyone. I remember running back to the barn and just seeing black, and after that I have no idea what happened. Along with minimal vet care, we had a neglectful barn owner and hardly any staff. Since they were understaffed, some underaged kids had to teach lessons. I remember I had just got done teaching a beginner lesson of a kid learning how to canter. It was a really hot summer evening, so the horse, who was 35 at the time and severely underweight, was overheating, so I ended the lesson a bit early to give him a bath and cool down. I gave him about a 35-minute bath before I put him in the pasture. As I was putting him back out, I went to go grab him the bag of carrots as a treat. I came back and called him over, and while he was walking over, he kind of stopped and looked like he was going to lie down, so I went to check him out. His breathing was really shallow and his gums were really pale. I sat down next to him and put his head on my lap and immediately called the barn owner, to which she said, "Kid, I'm in McDonald's." She likes to do meetings at fast food restaurants. I don't know why. "What do you want me to do about it? You're old enough to know what to do." I remember not being able to say anything and just sobbing into the phone, petting him. That's when he took his final breath. When I realized he was gone, I hung up the phone and went home, and then I was blamed for his death. Holy. I was not ready for that. I don't know if you guys were ready for that. But I will never understand why some people cannot just retire a damn horse when they need to be retired. There is no reason that a 35-year-old horse who's severely underweight needs to be ridden at all, let alone at the canter on a hot summer day. Like, really? Is that what you think is good for your business? Like, I absolutely cannot. And I feel so terrible for that horse. And I'm glad that this person who sent me the story was able to be there with him. And hopefully that gave him some comfort. But like, just imagine being like a barn owner. I mean, I can picture the people who run my barn. If anything was ever wrong with any of the horses, they like come running. And any horse, whether it's theirs or not theirs, like, because they care, like, they're human, you know? And I just, you have got to be like not human to be able to know that a horse needs help and just be like, but I'm at McDonald's. Like, like what even kind of mindset is that? Oh my gosh, that just breaks my heart. And as far as like poor property management, I try to explain to people all the time how dangerous it is to have poor fencing or not have kickboards up in shelters or stalls, and people just don't care. And I'm like, well, I can only feel so bad for you when your horse catastrophically injures itself. I feel bad for the horse because it's not their fault, but why people don't try to make a safe area for their horses, I will never understand. Like, aren't we all aware that horses want to self-destruct and then you just make it easier? You're like, here you go, here's 86 things that you can unlive yourself on. Oh my gosh. All right, let's do a couple more of these stories. All right, this one's really short. A few years back, when I had just started getting serious with riding, my trainer, we'll call her Megan, decided at one point it'd be okay to start working my horse without my permission. And this wasn't just groundwork. She would jump him. He's 25 now, he was 21 at the time, but that wasn't the bad part. I didn't mind if she jumped him over small cross rails, but no, she jumped him over jumps as high as 1.55 meters. Of course, this made me angry, but it got even worse. When my horse would refuse because he genuinely couldn't do it, she would beat him, and I mean beat him, with the crop. I fired the trainer as soon as it happened, but I still can't use a crop on my horse today. I would be calling family members for bail money if this happened to me, because I would, like, my face is red just like thinking about someone doing that to my horse. Like, all of those things together, like riding it without my permission, jumping it without my permission, jumping it that high, and then beating it. Oh my Lanta, I would be floored. And the amount of trainers who, like, only or like entire profile of training is just beating their horses, like, you're not teaching them anything. You're just whacking them to make yourself feel good. And that poor horse has no idea what the hell they did wrong or what they're supposed to be doing, because you just think that training is smacking them until they do something that you want. Like, why is it that anybody can just call themselves a trainer? That just floors me. All right, I think this will be our last one for today. Hi, I've changed all names and location details, so I'll start my story. 3 years ago, I switched barns to this small stable, 10 horses and 2 Shetlands at the time. The instructor was amazing at first. Lauren was friendly, funny, and she let me exchange work for lessons, so I helped her run summer camp. After I'd been there 3 months, I went to my first show, and after we got back, we started giving hay, and Lauren just started crying, saying she can't take care of all of these horses by herself. Lauren said she needed helpers, but she couldn't afford to pay staff. She made $60,000 in 1 month of summer camp, but whatever. So 13-year-old me was guilted into working all winter. Northern winters, icy, cold, and horrible. Which I didn't mind at all. I loved her horses, especially one named Moose. He was a big draft cross, probably Belgian thoroughbred. So I worked and got trail rides on Moose. The original agreement was a 30-minute lesson for 6 hours of work. I was there 4 days a week. Then on spring of 2020, the pandemic starts. Moose pops a quarter of his hoof off from an old abscess thanks to a shoddy farrier and poor field conditions. I'm at the barn every day, soaking Moose's hoof in hot water, feeding the other horses, wrapping his hoof, exercising him, and hand grazing him, as well as working an OTTB mare named Cash. No more trail rides as payment, obviously. By the time summer camp starts back again, Moose is back in action and he's at 100%. But camp got overbooked, so Moose was working 6 lessons a day, with Saturdays being a party day. He normally worked 2 parties on these party days. All of this is very unhealthy for a 14-year-old draft cross, and at the end of summer, he had another hoof pop. Much smaller this time, only about an eighth of his hoof. He got the abscess in the middle of summer when I had taken a few days off to see my grandfather that had cancer. The kids hadn't been picking his hooves out, and he had gotten a rock shoved up pretty good in there by the time I got back. So yet again, I nursed Moose back to 110% just in time for shows. We did a jumping and dressage show, and we got first in both of our classes at both shows. Now Lauren is less than happy I had been winning on her big, ugly, good-for-nothing draft, so she starts pressuring me to show the OTTB mare cash, which I politely tell her I want to event, which means I need a horse like Moose that likes to be out of the arena. Cash thinks that the walk to the arena is scary and she could never compete cross-country. Lauren had a bunch of beginner lessons come in and she was never down in the yard, so she would tell me their names and I would teach them. This continued until I left and I had 40% of her walk lessons walk trot canter. Forward to 2020 in the winter, Lauren tries to sell Moose behind my back, except my dad finds the ad and he calls Lauren to offer to buy him. But Lauren tells Dad that he doesn't want to buy Moose and that she wasn't really going to sell him anyway. She takes the ad down, and in 2021, I'm no longer getting lessons, not even my weekly paid lesson, and Lauren has started verbally harassing me at the barn suddenly during my trail rides. My seat was horrible, I used my legs too much, and my reins were always too long and too loose. I didn't go into 2-point at the right times, and anything I did with horses, making grain, handing out hay, etc. By the time summer camp came around, Moose was being used too much again, and Lauren owed me an insane amount of lessons, so my mom went to her and asked if we could use the unused lessons for the show fees. Lauren lost her mind about that, yelling that I had been abusing Moose and that I was the reason he had gotten 2 abscesses in 1 year. Not the fact that she uses a crappy farrier and the fields are a wreck, just muddy, steep, rocky messes, and that she overuses Moose constantly. So I had made the hardest decision ever and I left Lauren's stables. Since I left, the stables have fallen into a wreck. The grain bins have become infested with mice, the horses aren't receiving their medicine, and Lauren's only boarder left after her horse got horrible ulcers. In February 2021, she went to Florida for a week-long vacation that turned into 3 weeks, and I worked at the barn every day, all day. I had someone she hired to help me the first week. She came back with a little 4-year-old mare that has remained untouched. Now that I think about it, she left me alone to care for her horses about every day. She would always take hours at her house getting a coffee every morning, and Lauren would leave for the grain store, which is 10 minutes away, at 1, and not be back till dark. So I've gotten back in contact with a few riders, and we're trying to work out what is best, either reporting her to local authorities or just buying the horses that are being mistreated. Recently, we realized even her advanced horses have also been extremely neglected in training, exercise, etc. Some of them think reporting her is a bit extreme, but they haven't worked with her as long as I have, and this has just slowly been getting worse and worse, and I know she'll never change. I think local law enforcement or animal control is a good solution, but I'm scared I'll lose Moose and all the other horses. I don't know your personal opinion or if you know of some crazy hidden law where unpaid farmhands can take their beloved horses as exchange for unpaid labor. Anyway, sorry this is so long. It's took a lot more than I thought to write this, but hopefully someone will realize they're in a bad situation and find their way out. It's totally okay. We worked our way through it. And like I said, I don't read these ahead of time. I just open them and read them with you guys so that I don't have any preconceived notion going into it. And so that makes it a little harder for me to read it as well, but that's okay. So that was a roller coaster. We're going to all take a deep breath now. I'm going to sip some of my tea. Okay. My first comment. I have never in my life seen any kind of summer camp program where the horses are actually well cared for. Like, full stop. Every time I've been to a summer camp, the horses are, like, mangy. They're not shiny because they're not being groomed. They're probably not fed very well. Their feet look like crap. A lot of them are swaybacked or skinny. It's so bad. Like, summer camps and most trail riding places, I stay very far away from. But there's so many stories of people who are trying to run boarding barns or lesson barns or training barns or whatever, and they don't take care of the horses and they can't pay their farmhands. And it's like, well, I hate to tell you that if you're having a hard time taking care of the horses and paying your staff, buying more horses is not the solution, right? Like, that's just more mouths to feed, more labor to take care of them. And it's really weird to me that this person loved Moose so much and was willing to buy that horse, or their parents were, and she was like, oh no, I'm just kidding. Like, it seems like a lot of times it's like an animal hoarding situation where like people just keep taking in more and more animals and they're like, oh, nobody else can have them because nobody will love them like I do. And it's like, well, maybe somebody else would actually feed them and trim their feet and give them attention and exercise them. Like, that's just, you can't care for that many horses. You can't give them good care, especially if you don't have help. And this person said that they were 13 when this all started. And that happens so often. I see small kids get guilted into helping around the barn in exchange for lessons. And it really exploits kids who don't have the same economic opportunity to pay for lessons. Because if you're just coming to the barn and your parents are dropping you off and you're paying for your lesson and you're leaving, then that's all fine and great. But if you want more and you can't afford more, then you're going to have that, you know, enthusiastic young kid who's willing to do anything for more horse time, me included, and they very easily get taken advantage of. I mean, I was very lucky. The place that I worked in exchange for lessons, it was very fair. I would work a couple of hours in the mornings, just like cleaning stalls and stuff, and then I would get what was essentially the equivalent of a lease ride. So I got to ride in the arena while my trainer was working horses, but it wasn't a lesson. It was just kind of time for me to practice, but still be supervised. And I thought that was a very fair exchange when I was like 10 or 11. And I was not working directly with horses, so it wasn't a dangerous job. I was just cleaning stalls and pitching hay or sweeping or whatever. But it was mutually beneficial. But in this instance, it sounds like the kid was very taken advantage of. And a lot of times there's nothing in writing about these situations. First of all, probably because of child labor laws. It's not like you can hire a 13-year-old in most places, depending on where you live. But there's nothing in writing, so the child is really not protected. And so they could do all this work, and then the trainer will just turn around and be like, well, I never said that you were going to get X, Y, or Z. And that happens a lot. So that's why, like, I'm so... And I think I get this partially from my mom too, and then the other part because I've been screwed over, is that you always, always, always have things in writing. Even if you think it is the most minuscule, ridiculous, small detail, don't ever assume, ask, and have it confirmed in writing. I've found myself in these situations before, and unless there's very serious neglect, and I'm talking like the worst of the worst, there's really nothing law enforcement can usually do. And that sucks. Because when I was in, I guess, middle school, I worked at a rescue that only took Humane Society cases. So this wasn't the kind of rescue where, like, owners could just dump their animals. It was all animals that had been seized by law enforcement. So these animals were in, like, the worst cases where law enforcement did actually get involved. And the problem is, at least where I was, in order for horses to be seized, I don't know about other animals, but for horses, there has to be like a pretty long span where not only are the horses not getting fed or watered, but there's not even food or water on the property. So if you've got starving horses out in a mud pit who are eating the bark off the trees and their skin and bones, but there's one bale of hay getting rained on in the driveway, well, technically there's food on the property and that's intent to feed, so the officers can't do anything. Or lack of vet care or anything like that. It can be very difficult. And also to think about, the animals have to be in such dire circumstances to even get the potential to be seized. And then with how long the legal system takes, by the time the law enforcement could go to do anything about it, the owner could have moved the animals to hide them. They could have done just enough to get law enforcement off their back. The animals could not make it that long. I mean, there are a lot of flaws in our system, at least in my area. I don't know what other countries are like. It's very, very easy to neglect your animals for an extremely long period of time and suffer no consequences. And it's not like you have to get a registration or permission to own a horse. So if law enforcement seizes one, you can just go back out and buy another one. I mean, you might be legally prohibited from owning animals, but who's watching you? Who's going to catch you? Especially if you're out in the middle of nowhere. You know what I mean? So it's, it's a really sad story, and like I said, something that I think happens a lot. And in my personal experience, I think the absolute best thing that you can do is document everything. Because even if law enforcement can't do anything about it because it's not quote-unquote bad enough, if you can document pictures of body conditions decreasing or hooves getting worse or injuries being left untreated or anything like that, document everything. And that way, if things do get bad, you have something to take to law enforcement, or you can, I hate to say expose them, and you have to be careful with how the laws are in different places with the recording on private property and whatever. And I'm in no way insisting that you should go on to, like, your neighbor's private property and do this. But I'm saying if you're at a lesson barn and you're seeing this lesson horse that you're riding, their body condition is really starting to go downhill or whatever, if you can just document that over time and kind of, because it's easy to, like think that a horse has lost a lot of weight, but then if you look at the pictures from month to month, you might be like, oh, it's not really that bad. Or you might be like, oh wow, it's a lot worse than I thought, because you've gotten used to seeing this slow change. Whereas if you look at April to July, there might be a pretty drastic change that you just, it's not as stark when you don't have them next to each other. So that is my number one piece of advice, is to document everything and speak up. It might get you kicked off the farm, but absolutely speak up. And the, I think, worst part too is, aside from law enforcement issues, is that a lot of places who treat their animals poorly or treat their people poorly have like these cult-like followings, and nobody can ever say an ill word about these places because their cult will be like right on your heels saying, oh, that's not true or whatever, which just grinds my gears. Because I just, why, how do you say that you love horses, but you're over here standing up for someone who has a documented history of mistreating them? I don't get it. I mean, horses are incredible, and the horse industry is such an incredible place, and we should all want to make it better. And the way that you make it better is by calling things out. Because if we just keep shoving them in the back of the hayloft and hoping nobody sees, that doesn't make it better. It makes it worse, and it just opens up the space for it to happen again. Because if you see that your friend went through this and nothing happened and they didn't stand up for themselves and they just let it go, are you going to think, oh, that must be normal, I should do that too? Absolutely not. We should be able to recognize when bad things are happening, know that we're not alone, and stand up to stop them. That's where we're going to stop the stories for tonight. If you have a submission, please send it in to me at spottedbay@gmail.com. We don't do listener stories in every single episode. We also do true crime and scandals and all kinds of stuff. I'm currently working on a Rita Crundwell episode, and I've got oodles of ideas. If you have an episode idea, feel free to send that over to me too, if this fits the category. Hopefully you enjoyed this episode. And I'm not going to say that I'm doing them every week because I'm just not good at sticking to schedules, but I want to keep cranking these out as much as I can. So if you enjoyed, please share with your friends, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to join us on our other social media channels where you can actually see my face and, more importantly, my horses. We are at Spotted Bay Productions on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and now on a podcast app of your choice. We hope you have a wonderful day and safe riding, and we will see you next time.